Before we start today's episode, I would like to acknowledge the traditional custodians of the land on where we meet, work and study, the Awabakal and Wurrumbay peoples. I'd like to pass my respect to elders past, present and emerging. Thank you to our sponsors, Dark Stories Newcastle, a true crime tour company where you can experience live and interactive crime theatre. Use the code DARKCCJS25 for a special discount. Welcome back to the UON Criminology Podcast, episode 2 of season 6. I'm your host, Estelle Cutler. This year marks the 125th anniversary for the first recognition of a woman in a policing role here in Australia. Victorian police matrons forged the pathway for what we see now in modern-day policing. Today, I speak with Dr. Alice Niekerk, a researcher and lecturer here at the University of Newcastle, and we will touch on who were police matrons, what they do, and how did they create the modern-day female police officer that we see today. All right, and we are recording. So, hi, Alice.
Hello.
Thank you so much for joining me today. How are you?
Yes, well, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Awesome. So today we're going to be talking about police matrons. I'll ask first off, so what got you interested in police matrons in the first place?
Sure. I sort of discovered police matrons by accident. I was doing research on the lockup. It's an old police station, Victorian-era police station here in Newcastle. And as I was researching that, I was looking at the cells and I sort of discovered that a policeman used to live there with his wife, and the wife was known as a police matron. And I hadn't heard this terminology before. I wasn't sure what that actually meant. So I started doing some research, and I discovered that this was a fairly common practice in the Victorian era, that a woman would live at the police station and sort of be an extension of her husband's policing duties. So police matrons would be responsible for searching women. They would be responsible for caring for children that were either lost or had come in contact with the criminal justice system. They also did funny things that you wouldn't really expect a police matron, police officer to do, like darning socks and doing laundry, those types of things. So they were quite an interesting part of the policing experience in Australia, the United States, and the UK during the Victorian era.
So it was not just Australia. This was also seen in the US and the UK as well?
Yep, absolutely. And most of the research that, in terms of the primary sources that I have found, the diaries that were kept by these police matrons, most of them do come from those international places, simply because those were much larger populations and there were a lot more police matrons working over there.
Yeah, awesome. So in what ways did the presence of police matrons impact the perception of law enforcement in local communities, especially considering the predominantly male police officers
Sure.
of that time?
Yep. So in the Victorian era, male police officers really were sort of walking the beat. The idea was that they were in a uniform walking around communities and they would deter crime in that way. They didn't really have the forensic skill set to investigate crime. So it was about being physically, visually present in the communities. Police matrons weren't allowed to walk a beat. They didn't have a uniform, anything like that. So they really worked in the police station. So their role in the community was a bit different. You see instances in these diaries and in some newspaper reports, you know, they're dealing with some of these social issues that are bubbling up, like family violence and alcohol abuse. There's also evidence that they were receiving correspondence from other jurisdictions, people asking, what does a police matron do? Is it making it better? Is the community sort of better served when there is a woman in the police station that's doing the searching and caring for children and things like that?
Yeah. So could you discuss any significant cases, for instance, where police matrons played a crucial role in handling specific situations or cases involving women or children?
Yeah, absolutely. So As I mentioned, I've found some really wonderful police diaries written by these women. And from there, I've been able to pull out all different things that they were doing. There is mentorship that they provided for young sex workers. workers, trying to locate runaways. People would send them letters saying, our daughter went missing, you know, 5 years ago. Has she turned up in your town? Those types of things. But I think the best way to sort of describe their work might actually be to read some of what they've written. So this is a police diary from 1893. Her name was Mary A. Jenkins, and she's describing a small part of her work. So she says, lost children are always brought to the police station and here were placed in the matron's care until claimed by a reliable person. Insane men and women were also cared for pending commitment into a hospital or asylum. Many times the women who were brought in intoxicated have young children, mere babes, with them. Stupid and helpless themselves, they cannot take care of the child, but the matron must. Varied indeed are the duties of a police matron. This branch of work is more far-reaching than one can imagine. So that's just sort of a small snippet of the sort of everyday type of police matron duties that they would be doing. And as you can see, they're performing really important work, but these women aren't saints. So, you know, in their diaries, with men in policing the Victorian era, we know there's a lot of brutality. There's a lot of violence in that role. This doesn't come up in the police matron's diaries. They do allude to sort of having to punish some women and some children. And this was a time period where corporal physical punishment was pretty well accepted. Now, in the diaries, I haven't seen evidence of sort of really intense abuse happening. But again, this is them writing their own story. A lot of people wouldn't include that in their own personal story.
So with the cases, they would work with domestic pursuits, especially with women coming in.
Yes.
Sex workers, yep. Children. So they were that kind of like motherly role in a way.
Oh, absolutely. And that was how this role was accepted by society, was because they tapped into the ideas of, okay, well, what should women be doing? Women should be caring for kids. They should be sort of good ladies, a good example in the community. So they were able to move into this male-dominated space by essentially really emphasizing the female side of what they did. And that's, to me, really, really fascinating and amazing that they were able to do that.
Yeah, so as the role of police matrons evolved over time, how did it contribute to the broader social progression of women's rights and opportunities, particularly within the context of law enforcement?
Oh, I believe that it's a direct line there. I really do. The first, so initially we have police matrons that are not formally recognized at all. They're an extension of their husband. They're not paid. There's no type of official recognition of the work that they're doing.
So they weren't paid to do this?
No, initially, like, no. It was the idea that it was the husband's wife, that she was a woman. She would naturally want to care for the children. She would naturally want to mentor and try to provide guidance for women when they came in touch with the criminal justice system. So yes, no pay. A couple might get paid per pat down. But that was somewhat uncommon. So yes, completely unpaid. About 1893, we get that first official recognition, and then they're paid something, not viewed as an extension of their husband. And it is in 1915 is when we finally see a police woman being hired here in New South Wales. And her roles were almost identical to a police matron. They were looking after children, dealing with women in relation to the criminal justice system. So, I mean, in my mind, it's a direct line. We go from women not being paid in this role to being paid, to being and recognized, to being fully paid, equal to men, and recognized as a police officer. Though those first police women were not sort of the equivalent to a policeman in a lot of other ways.
So those are milestones, really.
Like, yeah, absolutely.
From police matron to finally a woman being hired as a police woman.
Yeah.
Of course, they had their setbacks compared to the men.
Yes.
But how are these milestones contributed to changing societal attitudes and policies that we now see today in present day?
Sure, absolutely. I found some interesting milestones that I thought I might want to share because they do reflect changing norms and values in society, and also that sort of creating new norms and values. So the police matrons, they showed communities that women could work in this field. The idea before this is that women, their sort of moral character was too weak, they couldn't sort of handle coming in contact with people that were offending. The idea is that if you were offending in the Victorian era, you're essentially a sinner, you have a weak moral character. So they sort of showed, no, we can work in this space and we can emotionally handle it and we make a really important contribution as well. So they sort of took the social framework at the time and in some ways used it to their advantage, the ideas about what women should be doing, but also really pushed against it at the same time. So some other interesting milestones, as we mentioned earlier, that first policewoman was hired in 1915. There were 500 applications, which to me really suggests women wanted to be working in this space. 1915, a lot of women still are not working outside the home. So this is a pretty remarkable show of interest. It really wasn't until World War II, though, where men had to leave Australia to go and fight, that we see more women coming into the force. There was a labor shortage. So that, again, opened up that little space for them to move in out of necessity and sort of show the world that they can work in this space effectively. It wasn't until 1958, though, that women that did go to the police academy were even allowed to walk in a graduation ceremony. So there's these, till pretty recently, these still major significant barriers and ideas about what women should and should not be doing. Certainly, the reproductive space that women inhabit and experience was a major hindrance in policing. So they were, until 1961, if they wanted to get married, they couldn't keep their career. They had to leave the force. So that was a major hindrance for women. So 1961, huge milestone to move past that. They weren't allowed to carry guns until 1974, and then only detectives could. And I noted
that. So they weren't able to carry a gun at all until 1974.
At all. Yep. So they weren't allowed to carry a gun. They also were not allowed to carry handcuffs. So you can imagine, this is very difficult to do some of the policing that has to occur. And they faced a lot of discrimination because of, reproductive status. There was no maternity leave for a long time. As I mentioned, they would be fired if they were married. But in the Victorian era, the idea was, okay, you have this weak moral character, you can't do it. Now they see, okay, women can do this. And they say, well, you're too little. Like women are, you're not strong enough, you're not big enough, you're not tall enough. So they had these height guidelines. They said, well, we're not discriminating, we just have these rules that exist. You know, yeah. You have to be tall, you have to be like a superhero man to be a police officer. Well, we know that that's not the reality. You know, women can affect really, really, can police really effectively in different ways. But it's always interesting to me to think, okay, they're worried about them not being physically big enough to apprehend people, but they also didn't give them handcuffs or a gun.
Yeah, it's like, how are they supposed to arrest someone,
yes.
You know?
Yes.
So we see a police matron from day dot to a modern-day police officer.
Yeah. Mm.
How are they similar? Like, what are the roles that both of them have that we sort of see today?
Sure, absolutely. Well, I think one argument that I make is that police matrons are doing the kind of policing that is best practice today. So best practice policing today is that community-based, problem-oriented policing. The idea that rather than responding to crime or investigating a crime after it happens, the police are part of a community and should be working with them to figure out why crimes are happening and how can we address the underlying causes. So we see this with the police matrons because they weren't out there sort of doing a beat walk. They were talking to women. They were seeing, like, you know, people's lives absolutely destroyed by alcohol and family violence, and were saying, hey, we need to address this issue. We can't just sort of just lock people up for being drunk. We can't just be providing shelter after someone's already been beaten up. We need to figure out a way to regulate alcohol consumption so that our community is safe. And that's exactly what police officers today are doing. I mean, the police officers here in Newcastle helped transform the entire drinking culture. We used to have the highest rates of physical alcohol-related assaults in Australia, and our work, police working with the community, transformed the way that alcohol is regulated, and now we're best practice. Sydney adopted our drinking policies because of that. So I think that we've almost come full circle in some ways. You know, we had this amazing boom in what forensic evidence we can collect and how we investigate crimes, and the police got really focused on that, and they've realized, wait, no, we are a member of the community. We have to be helping support communities and not just responding to crime.
Yeah. You mentioned before that police matrons focused on especially sex workers, women in domestic abuse relationships, yeah, and children.
Yeah.
So we see as well now, modern day times, that those victims of crime may prefer a woman police officer to interact with or interview them or take a statement from. How is that connection? Like, do you think it's...
Yeah, it is. It's interesting. I was thinking about this today because in the U.S., there's sort of a big conversation around who is working in correctional facilities, because there have been some really terrible cases of male correctional officers sexually exploiting female inmates. And there's been a conversation happening, you know, should it be women guarding women? Is that what we need to do to try to help balance and minimize this risk of exploitation? Now, I don't think that females are, you know, like magic, and that every, you know, that female correctional officers or female police officers are all perfect and they won't exploit women or be insensitive to their needs. Certainly that can happen. But I think it is interesting that we're sort of coming back and considering, is there something there? How do we best support victims? And does it mean that women should be talking to other women in these situations? In some instances, maybe yes.
Yeah, there's such a big male to female ratio. 30% in Australia are female police officers.
And that's a great number. I mean, which is
amazing from our history, but yeah, it's such a big gap.
It is. Absolutely, it is. And I think that it is unfortunate. I think there are still ideas about what a policeman looks like, and that is that sort of tall man. I think that there are still those ideas that policing is men's work. And unfortunately, we do know we've made these great strides. We've gone from two police women to, you know, over 30%, still we're not at parity. And unfortunately, when we do look at the experiences of females in policing, we see that they still experience higher rates of sexual harassment, lower job satisfaction overall. So that's problematic. That suggests that there's still these issues, systemic issues in police departments that we've been pushing back against for a really, really long time, but it's not quite there yet.
Yeah. Were there any specific legal or policy changes that marked the shift towards greater gender diversity and inclusion within Australia law enforcement agencies?
Yeah, definitely. There are a lot. And what's interesting to me is that they sort of come in at all different levels. So you have these big international frameworks. One of those is the International Labor Conventions regarding women having equal pay, equal rights and opportunities at work. So we have these sort of big legal frameworks that Australia signs on to that then they hopefully will adhere to. Sometimes that doesn't always work. But then we also see some at the state level, like New South Wales anti-discrimination law. That helped a lot, I believe, with some of the maternity leave issues and not being able to discriminate against women once they were married. And then there's been a lot of investigations regarding the experience of women in police forces, because it hasn't always been positive. It's been a hard, tough road for women to get where they are today. So it's a combination of a lot of work to get to this point.
Yeah. Do we see any differences between women police officers from Australia, UK, USA? Are they majority of the same policies and regulations, or is it just flatline? differences?
Oh, no, there's always differences. I mean, those three countries have historically always exchanged information, ideas, best practice models. And so I think that in all of those places, we're seeing steady improvement in terms of representation, work experience in the workforce, and those types of things, but those similar boundaries as well. I mean, I mentioned, you know, my ideas, my old sort of old-fashioned ideas I didn't realize I had carried about what policing looks like. I mean, sometimes it's definitely still a boys' club, and I think that it's hard to transform those spaces, and it's in some ways like the police matrons. People were really worried about letting them into that space. They didn't want them policing men at all. That was one of the key things, is they could only deal with women and children. So there's historically been this reluctance for women to be able to have that kind of power and control in society. And I mean, the reality is police are one of the most powerful institutions that we have. They have a monopoly on the use of force in our community. And, you know, there's some deep concerns about that, I think, in some populations when women step into that role.
Yeah.
Well, that is all the questions that we have for today. Alice, thank you so much for joining me on this episode.
Well, thank you. Thanks for having me.
You've been listening to the UON Crim Podcast, hosted by Estelle Cutler, run by the University of Newcastle Criminology and Criminal Justice Society. I'd like to thank today's guest, Dr. Alice Niekerk. Please stay tuned for our next episode, released next month. You can stay up to date by following our social media at UONCCJS. Thank you so much for listening. I'll see you next time.